Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Welcome. My name is Brenda Lanoff of the Mindful Healing Show. So I'm a intuitive practitioner and work with many different healing modalities with people around the world. And one of the things I love to do, I do love to share other practitioners and intuitive gifts, and so that we can give a vast array of options for people to listen to, and so that they know that, you know, Eastern and Western medicine, they really can truly work together. So this radio show is for anyone who wants to experience some unique and powerful ways to complement your current practices. So if you are a patient, if you are a healthcare professional, a holistic healer, any individual looking for transformation, I welcome you. Tonight, my guest is Dave Barnett. And before I bring Dave on, I'm just going to mention a bit here that Dave is the mystic. He really is a rocket scientist. He has multiple technical degrees in electrical engineering, bioengineering, and computer science. Dave also has a degree in psychology. In 1983, he had a life-changing event and started delving into many areas of metaphysics and focused on energy healing. In 1999, the big hands came down, and since then he's had many spiritual gifts present themselves, including advanced healing methods, shamanic journeying, and soul splinter return, past life readings, retrieving souls from hell, working with subconscious core beliefs, doing karma burning, and performing energy clearing. So Dave mentors those on the path of spiritual advancement. So, wow. Dave, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
You do a multitude of healing work, and I'm very curious. When I read that in 1999, the big hands came down, what happened in 1999? What do you mean by that?
Well, if we go back to 1983, that was sort of the first time, and I had gone to I'm from Wichita, Kansas, and moved to Denver in 1981. In 1983, I went to my 10th high school reunion, ran into an old friend that I hadn't seen since we graduated, and he was a radio disc jockey, and he said, "Did you become an electrical engineer like you planned?" I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Do you think it's possible to change things at a distance?" And he kept beating around the bush. He wouldn't come right out and say what was on his mind. But he said, "Come over to my house after the picnic. I want to show you some things." And we went over to his house, and the first thing he had me do is walk up to the electric meter with him. And he said, "Okay, do you have an idea of the rate of the wheel? Because I have a little wheel in there that spins." And I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Now," and points at it, and it slowed by a third. And he said, I did this to my mother's house several months ago, and her bills are still lower." Okay. We went inside. He had a black and white TV on rabbit ears, and in Wichita at that time, there were only 4 transmitted channels. He puts it on snow. He looks at the TV, points at it, and says, "Now," and he tunes in a channel. We went to his stereo, and since he was a disc jockey, he was really big into sound quality, and on a stereo, it had the VU needles that show the left and right channel strength, and he says, "Do you have an idea of how they're going?" Because they typically go one direction when the music gets louder. And I said, "Yeah," and he goes, "Now," and they start going the other direction. So when the music went louder, the needles went down, and when it went softer, they went up, so they were backwards. We went out and sat in his car, and it was a conventional ignition. It was idling, and he said, "Now." And he could take the idle down to the point where the car would stall, and he told me he could stall other cars in traffic. We went to his radio station, and it was a 50,000-watt FM station, and he showed me that he could lower the output power a little bit, because he said, "If I go too much, I trip it off the air." And he lowered it 0.4%. Well, 0.4% of 50,000 watts plus the overhead energy that it takes to get that out of the antenna is a whole lot of power, and it goes far beyond any other demonstrations I've ever seen on people affecting things at a distance through, like, psychokinesis. And so I came back to Denver, and I said, well, okay, I've always been open to the idea of ESP, but now I've got to dig into it. And so I started digging because it seemed to me that that was a demonstration that, being an electrical engineer, I was set up to have that specific demonstration in an area where I knew it couldn't be faked. And so that was 1983, and I did a lot of different traditions and modalities and ended up working mostly with energy healing. And then in 1999, as I was getting some readings, the messages started coming through that I needed to kick it back up. And I left Lockheed Martin in 2000 after 19 years there, went to a small engineering company, and continued to start working on my gifts. And then in 2003, I left there because I had a contract with the Air Force and another small company. And the voice essentially said in my head, you have all the time you need, you have all the money you need, go learn everything you can about healing. And that was when a whole lot of gifts started appearing, and momentous things were happening to me spiritually. And so I really went far beyond just basic energy healing. I learned a lot of different modalities, but I also learned other things too in there. And one of the things that came through to me very easily was past life reading and reading the Akashic Records, to the point now where, you know, as soon as a client asks a question or we form an intention, I just start getting flooded with information about what's going on there.
Wow. Well, I'm excited. I think there's a few people here on the call that may like to talk to you. And so great. You're going to be doing some mini sessions today, I believe, with these past life readings.
Yeah, let me kind of put some concepts there on what people can ask for. I always talk about this worksheet that I use at fairs. It's sort of being like a buffet. You can bounce around to different things. I think, given that we're doing smaller readings, and now to stay on one particular one, but there are several options. One that's very popular for people is, have I ever had a past life with X before? You know, whether it's a husband, spouse, sibling, or it could be two other people. Have my parents had other lifetimes together? That type of thing. And I numerically determine how many types of lifetimes, or how many lifetimes you have in the past, and the types they are, whether it's couple, parent, child, siblings, or friends. And then I start drilling down, and I find the year, who's who, what kind of relationship it was, where it was, maybe the family's business, were there particularly good or bad things, and the age of death for those people in that lifetime. So that's one option that callers could have. Another one, I do a lot of work with fears and phobias. I find that a lot of the serious ones are due to how you were killed or how you died in other lifetimes, or even in some cases how you were treated in other lifetimes. And frequently when you hear what the reason for that is, it becomes very easy to release, and I can walk the caller through some belief statements to change the subconscious core beliefs and disconnect from that lifetime, you know, essentially go through a forgiveness script to release the people who did that stuff to you. And a lot of people have gotten over fear of flying, gotten over claustrophobia, a lot of other fears, fear of water, fear of drowning, things like that. Fear of things around the neck, because so many people have been either hanged or strangled or beheaded in other lifetimes. So that's another option. Another option is health issues. Whether they're chronic or acute, I find that many of them are tied into other lifetimes. And particularly, say you just start having severe hip problems when you're 37. And we might go back and find out at about that age in another lifetime, you were working in a rock quarry and you were crushed by a rock, either accidentally or deliberately, and it left you crippled. And some of those energies come through. And once again, I can walk the person through some scripts to disconnect from that other lifetime, those people in it, and move on from that. And a lot of times people start finding relief, or else at the very least we remove the blocks that would keep a chronic condition from healing. So that's another possibility. I'm also open to what if questions, or what about, you know, one that I get a lot is, have I ever been a witch in other lifetimes? And if so, was I killed because of it? And we can answer those questions. Or have I ever been a king or queen? Or have I ever been a healer or a shaman? Or those types of things. You know, besides the mundane lifetimes that everybody's had, where might have been the little farmer who had 1 acre and he lived in the same spot and died at the age of 35 and nothing really happened in your lifetime. You took care of the cow. You know, everybody has a bunch of those.
I'm curious, Dave. You know, the engineering. I worked with many engineers in the field in Calgary here, and which is the oil and gas industry. So I know it's very left brain. And then here you are, like this whole, to me, really right brain, doing all of this fabulous work. It's not a common thing that I have noticed amongst, I'm going to say, you know, engineers, for example, to have both gifts so strong.
Yeah, it's something that's really come through for me. I knew as a kid I wanted to be an electrical engineer because in fifth grade, I discovered electrical circuits, and I just had this burning desire to learn how they work. But here's one of the things that happens is, you know, science comes up with basic principles. Engineering translates those principles into useful things for the public. So, you know, a scientist may come up with how a radio transmitter works, but an engineer comes up with how do we get everybody a transistor radio and have radio stations in all the cities. And so engineers are very pragmatic, and for example, a very fundamental law for electrical engineers is Ohm's law, and basically it says the voltage in volts equals the current through a resistive element times the resistance in ohms, so amps times ohms equals volts. Very fundamental. It works virtually every time you do an experiment with this, and it works out as many digits as you can measure beyond the decimal point perfectly. But here's the problem when you pin an electrical engineer down and you say, okay, what does Ohm's law tell you about the actual performance of an electron in an atom when current is flowing through it and what that electron looks like? And there's nothing. Ohm's law is a wonderful macro description of circuit behavior that works every time, but Ohm's law does not tell you what an electron looks like. And if you talk to a quantum physicist and say, what does an electron look like, they'll say that question doesn't make any sense, because that's a different realm of understanding that they have. And so I really found that for all I knew with a master's degree in electrical engineering, about the world and about circuits and everything, it really told me nothing about the basic physics and what's happening there. And that understanding just keeps evolving in terms of the background. So we now have this curious situation where if you ask a number of quantum physicists, do you believe in God? Oh, no, I'm an atheist. Okay, do you believe that there's a background energy field that has consciousness? Oh, yeah, I don't have any problem with that based on what I've seen. And so you say potato, I say potato. We both end up with a conscious universe that is energy filled and does many things and leads to many opportunities. So it's really helped me expand. And when you start meditating a lot, start journeying, then you run into many things that go so far beyond our physical world.
Okay. Wow, it's all very, very interesting, Dave, and I'm just excited to have you start working with one of the people on the call.
Sure.
I see caller, Jason, are you there?
Yeah, hi, Dave, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. How about yourself?
Good.
How can I help you? What would you like to know?
Well, like, I feel like like, first of all, I want to say thank you for being on this show, and really interesting hearing about your background. I think, Brenda said, it's pretty interesting to have an engineer who is really into the holistic side of things, so it's a really cool attribute to have. I was wondering, I know for myself, I'm kind of getting into paramedic field right now, coming out of a little gas, and I really need to kind of work on my communication skills a little bit more in terms of just blockages. I feel like I have good people skills, but I tend to just get the word verklempt once in a while. I think I'm a little bit somewhat eccentric and awkward around people at times, but I do have a big heart, and sometimes I get a little bit frustrated with people, with humanity as a whole, because I feel like, you know, the state of consciousness on this planet isn't quite what up to maybe where I'm at, and I get frustrated with people, but I know that that's just something that I need to work on. I've really had a strong connection in terms of wars in the past. So I think I've been a soldier in the past. I'm pretty sure I've died in past wars. I'm really connected with military shows. I'm just war movies and things like that. So maybe there's a connection there. But I just wanted to really try to work through my blockages I think I have sometimes with communication with the general public, and they're, you know, and just try to get through that awkward, eccentric side of myself a little bit in order to kind of move forward in this new field. So
okay.
I could leave that with you.
Sure. When I hear words like that where you may have some awkwardness about communicating or things like that, things start coming to my mind. How many past lives have you had where you've been punished because of how you're communicating with people? And I'm immediately hearing both in healing work, but also in religious leadership roles. And so let's take a look at that. So we'll see how many lifetimes you've had doing healing work or religious leadership roles where you have somehow been punished because of what you communicated to people, either deliberately or accidentally, inadvertently, or maybe you're naive. And so if we check on that, I muscle test, so 5, 10, 9, 8, 7, so 7 lifetimes. And if we look at the ones where you were doing healing and end up getting punished, I get yes, 1, 2, 3, so 2 times. If we look at the religious side, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so 4 times. So there's another one here because that's only 6. Let me see what else comes up. It's funny. I get a court jester. They were always on the hairy edge between being the conscience to the king versus if you step just a little bit too far, you might find yourself in really hot water with the king. And so I get one of those. Now, if I check on the healing ones, how were you punished? I do see 2 times you lost you had your tongue cut out, frankly, which would not be a good way to go. They kind of ruin your life. If I look at the religious leadership, if I see physical punishment, and if I see death, physical punishment, yes, 1, 2, 3, so 2 times. Death, yes, 1, 2, so 2 times. And as the court jester, that was an execution. So all of these, you're doing things, the common thread in there is you're doing things that you believe are for other people's best interests. And the problem that you could have is that somebody else in a position of authority disagrees, assumed you knew better, or you should have known better, and they made an example out of you. So what I'm going to start with here is walking you through a script to essentially forgive these people who punished you in these other lifetimes, and then I'm going to walk you through a number of belief statements to sort of tune up your subconscious to get you in a better place on your career choice, okay?
Sure.
Okay, so go ahead and just repeat this. Say, I, Jason. Unconditionally forgive and release.
Unconditionally forgive and release.
All those who have hurt or killed me.
All those who have hurt and killed me.
In other lifetimes.
In other lifetimes.
Especially as a punishment.
Especially as a punishment.
For me speaking out.
For me speaking out.
And saying what I thought was right.
And saying what I thought was right.
I release all karmic ties.
I release all karmic ties.
As we walk forward into the light.
As we walk forward into the light.
Okay, and then I check that at the end on a muscle test, and I get a strong. So that's good. So now you're disconnected from those lifetimes. So go ahead and say, I can release all fear.
I can release all fears.
Of speaking my mind.
Of speaking my mind.
And speaking my truth.
And speaking my truth.
In all areas of my life.
In all areas of my life.
Especially as a health practitioner.
Especially as a health practitioner.
I know that I'm safe in this society.
I know that I'm safe in this society.
I know that I'm free of persecution.
I know that I'm free of persecution.
I know that I can do well in this profession.
I know I could do well in this profession.
Okay. Go ahead and say, I release the need.
I release the need.
To have any hesitation.
To have any hesitation.
Or any other speaking difficulties.
Or any other speaking difficulties.
When I'm interacting with teachers.
When I'm interacting with teachers.
Co-workers.
Co-workers.
Or clients.
Or clients.
Okay, and that's strong. Yeah, I think we're about done with that. That should help quite a bit. These other lifetimes where, you know, you were punished, you know, I frequently run into people who approach me for readings, and they're somewhat reclusive, and they're wonderful, wonderfully gifted psychics or intuitives, and they essentially won't come out of the closet because they have these fears from other lifetimes that they're going to be tortured, you know, for being a witch, things like that. So these things do emerge. They do reappear, and from my point of view, past lifetimes are ongoing. It's not like the film is on the reel and it's over and done with. And so past lifetimes can affect us. We can affect past lifetimes. Future lifetimes can interact with us, and we can probably learn about future lifetimes. So this is all ongoing. I don't see it as just being where we are. You know, one of the models that they use for this is that you're on a curvy, twisty river, and when you're in a canoe on that river, you can't see around the next bend. So you think you're very isolated as a point in time. But if you get in a hot air balloon and you could float up, you could essentially see all your past lifetimes at other bends in the river all happening at the same time. And to a certain degree, because of what goes down the river, they have interactions. So I kind of like that as a metaphor better than the idea that, you know, what you did yesterday is over and done with, and the Jason from yesterday is that's just past history now, and it's right down in Akashic records, and you're done with it. I don't think that's true, and so I see a lot of interaction here.
Well, Dave, just to reiterate, are you saying then that basically you think like affirmations can get rid of these like cords that have been tied to our past lives, or do we need a little bit of assistance on top of just affirmations, like someone like yourself?
Let me talk about belief statements versus affirmations. If you go to my website, DaveTheMystic.com, I talk about a system called Psych-K, Psychology Kinesiology, and in that system, you work with clients and you come up with belief statements, and they have a core set of belief statements in different areas that you test on. And then when I'm done with those, then I intuit statements. From my point of view, I like the system a lot better. I'm not very keen on looking in the bathroom mirror each morning and repeating an affirmation 30 times and doing it for 30 days. I would rather do it once, muscle test it that it's strong, that it's taken it's made that change in your subconscious and your core beliefs, and you're ready to move forward. So from my point of view, these are distinctly different from affirmations because they're changing core beliefs that you have in various layers of your aura. If you've ever read the Barbara Brennan book on Hands of Light, she actually talks about these core belief statements being out in the seventh and the fifth layers. And from my point of view, as they approach the physical layer and get closer and closer, then they're more likely, if they're defective, to give you health issues and things like that. And so I look at those and detect those through muscle testing and head those off. And from my point of view, going through a few belief statements one time is sufficient to change things radically within you.
Right. So it's not something you can, like, can you do that on your own, or do you need assistance from someone like yourself to kind of really cut that cord?
I can do it on my own because I've done so much of it, and I've really worked so hard for 20 or 30 years on my clarity so that I don't have any filters that get in the way, either for myself or for other people. For somebody like you, you could take the training for Psy-K, or you know, there's some other systems like the UN method, Y-U-E-N, that works with belief statements, things like that, or Theta Healing is another one. And you get those, get some of that work in belief statements. But I think if you're starting out, it's better to work with somebody else because basically I don't have a dog in the fight in your life situation. So you tell me what's going on, and I can apply discernment and just say, well, from my outsider's point of view, this is what I see is going on. Whereas in your case, if you're doing it with yourself and you haven't done a lot of this work, then it's tougher to separate yourself from it and say, I can really drill down to the core of this.
Right. Well, it's like a non-biased point of view. So.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Dave.
Sure. Well, thanks for calling in, and it's good talking to you. You take care.
Thank you.
So, Jason, if you can do, please do a *6.
Okay.
To unmute. And I believe we have another caller on. Is
sure.
that Angela? Are you
Hi.
There, Angela? Yeah.
Can you hear
go
me?
Ahead. Yes. Go
Hi,
ahead.
Angela.
Hi, I've had a question pretty much all my adult life, and I had, and it's around children, my children. I've had three kids. I lost the first one. It was a little girl at 18 months, when she was 18 months.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then, that's okay. And then my second son was born, and he's on the autism spectrum, and I am a healer. So as much as I'm able to help so many others, I haven't been able to help him, and I've tried just about everything with him to the point where I wanted him to be. So my question is, and I've always felt like, oh, my gosh, you know, am I being punished for something that I've done in a past life?
Mm-hmm.
Or to have kids that you know, that have had trouble in one way or another. So I don't know. I'll leave that with you. Maybe you can...
Yeah. Okay, so you said you had three kids, but you lost
yes.
the first one and the second
yes.
one. And
the second one is fine. The
okay.
second one is fine. A son, he's almost 27, and the last one is 25, and that's the one who's on the spectrum.
Okay.
And, yeah.
Well, let's take a look, and there are several possibilities, so I'm just going to muscle test here to see which way we should go. And so one possibility, obviously, is that there were circumstances in other lifetimes for you where this is sort of, I don't want to say it's karmic payback or anything like that, but this is appreciating the situation from another point of view, and I get a no on that. So if I... if we look at the first one, what was the first child's name, first name?
Jessica.
Okay. And what's the second child's name?
My second child's name is Jeremy, and
yeah.
the third one is Michael.
Okay. So if I look and say, are the situations with the first two kids due to similar causes, and I get a no. So they're very distinct. So I'm going to take you, I'm going to look at number of past lives you've had with Jessica first, because that's where I'm led. And so if I look at how many past lifetimes you've had with Jessica, I get yes, one, two, three, four, five, so four. Four times. I always test up to the first number that's false, so that's why I have to back off one number. If I look at how many lifetimes as a couple, I get yes, one, two, three, so two times. If I look at parent-child, no. If I look at siblings, I get yes, one, two. So two times as a couple and two times as siblings. And I'm going to set the intention that we're going to look at the most relevant lifetime of that leading to this lifetime. And I'm seeing the couple, and let me see which one of those. So I'm getting 1297 BC, and I'm getting in the area of Greece. I don't know if it's Greece back then. And let me see who's who. I get Jessica as a husband.
Okay.
And I get Angela as wife.
Okay.
In that lifetime, I see Jessica's husband dying at the age of 32. I see Angela as wife dying at 31. I see two sons and one daughter in that lifetime. And Jessica's husband, let me see. I see him both as a farmer sometimes, but also as a soldier. And so let me see, I'm going to drill down here for just a second and look at why that lifetime led to this one. And okay, this is why I'm getting, you guys weren't in Sparta, and I'm not sure the years for Sparta, when it, as a society, was going big, but you had a somewhat of a similar practice, but I think there was some disagreement. And here's the basic situation. In Sparta, when a child was born, if that child wasn't obviously perfect, the child was taken out to an area and left to the elements to die. And end of story. We're not going to burden our Spartan society with somebody who can't either be a fully realized woman with those responsibilities or be a fully realized male soldier. And even though you weren't in Sparta, I do see that you had two children, and based on their issues at birth, you forced the issue of leaving them out to pass and not nurturing them or taking care of them. Because whatever your culture was coming into this marriage, you felt that, you know, it just wasn't in the cards to take care of somebody who wasn't, you know, ready to be pretty much, you know, whole and complete. And so I think a little bit of this energy coming back for losing one of the children is just sort of seeing a different perspective on it, especially now that you're in a society that, with reasonable modern medical care, can take care of a lot of these things and look over them. So I think that is part of the solution. I'm certain there's a lot more information to it, but this is the one that is coming through to me as being sort of the most important one or the key one for that.
Okay.
And to make you feel a little bit better about this or not be too concerned, you know, from our viewpoint as humans, having a child die early is really rough. From a spiritual viewpoint of a soul coming into a child, in the spiritual plane with you and that other soul talking about how you're going to interact, and if you said, you know, there's something in me that needs to have some experiences, have some learning, that type of thing. Therefore, would you mind coming in as a child that does not reach adulthood? And the other soul says, oh, shoot, the shorter the time that I'm incarnated, the happier I am. You know, I'd rather be back here.
Mm-hmm.
that there's no shortage of soul candidates to be in children who die shortly after birth, for example. Because from their point of view, this is the rough part, and they have the nice part. So lots of volunteers in your close friends and spiritual plane with other souls that would take on these kinds of jobs or duties.
Okay.
If we look at Jeremy and you,
we have a beautiful relationship, the two of us.
Good, good. If we look at you and Jeremy, number of lifetimes you've had together, yes, 1, 2, 3, so just 2. And as a couple, no. As parent, child, no. Siblings, yes, 1, 2, so mm-hmm. Siblings is one time. And friends is one time. Let's drill down into both of those. So the siblings, immediately get 2 brothers in England.
Wow.
1790. And I get Jeremy as the older.
Mm-hmm.
And I see both of you in construction in that lifetime. And I do see an issue here. If I look at the age of dying for Jeremy, I get 41. And for you, Angela, I get 29. But here's an issue I see, and I don't know who else came in, is I do see an accident for Jeremy in that lifetime with a head injury and ending up with mental deficits. And I see you as being sort of a protector while you're still alive. I don't know what happened to you. Maybe you got... let me just check. Yeah, because this is coming through for me, is that you actually died in a fight defending Jeremy. You know how kids and adults, especially in those ancient times, could be very, very rough about somebody had deficits. You know, you have the town idiot, or you have, you know, this person with this deformity or things like that. They could be very cruel. And I see that you died in a fight defending Jeremy. So obviously other people took care of Jeremy until Jeremy's life passed. If we look at the friends part of this, let's take a look at that. And I'm getting 1257, and for some reason I get Finland, which is fine. And as friends, once again, I get 2 men, and I get Jeremy as the older again, and Angela is the younger. I see Jeremy in that lifetime dying at 53, which is tremendously old for that period. I see you dying at 47, and let me see what the nature of your relationship is. I see you both as soldiers. To reach that age, you have both had been very senior. And here the worst I'm getting is that you watched each other's back. So mm-hmm. part of the reason you survived is you had somebody you could count on.
Okay.
So I think part of the message for whatever Jeremy has going on in this lifetime, it's sort of based on a lot of trust that you were there to take care of Jeremy, and
mm-hmm.
there may be other lessons in, you know, why autism, why, you know, these things.
Jeremy doesn't have the autism, though. It's Michael that has the autism.
Oh, I mixed up the names. Okay.
Yeah, so it's Michael, yeah.
Okay, okay. Well, sorry about that.
No problem.
So we've been talking about Michael then. Okay.
Oh, we've been talking about Michael. Okay.
Yes, because that's what I was drawing into, is the autism.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
perfect.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff going on there. And, you know, in Jessica's case, it's sort of, you know, a little bit of learning some other lessons coming forward. And in Michael's case, it's it's sort of reversed. So you have kind of a complex mix of kids there.
I do. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Sure. I hope that helps. Yes.
Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome. Take care.
Okay. You too.
Thanks, Angela, for coming on. If you could do a *6-2, please.
Thank
that's
you,
great. Yeah, thank you. So, wow, that's I love how you're able to, I guess we both use the term drill down.
Yeah,
I use that terminology too, but very, very quickly as to the time frames. And, yeah, that's great. So interesting. Now, the Psych K, I'm very familiar with Psych K. I know people who do Psych K. And can you explain, I know it's one of your areas that you specialize in, this is all about belief systems, is it not, the Psych K? And then you go through a process of where you clear it out, and if so, can this be done at a distance?
Talk about it a little bit. It's created by a guy named Rob Williams, who lives in Crestone, Colorado now, and I think it was in late 80s, early 90s, and he was an MA in psychology and working in the school system, and one night, just a whole bunch of things just kept stacking up, and no matter what he did, things went wrong as he's trying to organize an event to work with, I think, Brain Gym with kids and have parents involved and demonstrate it. And he finally went out his backyard and essentially shook his fist at God and said, okay, it's obvious you don't want me to do that. What do you want me to do? And he started getting downloads. And so here's the concept of Psy-K. Psy-K views that you have a subconscious that looks like a little disk drive. And a disk drive has a whole lot of rules. And some of those rules may have shown up before you were born. A lot of them happen in early childhood. And those rules are administered by a level of personality of maybe a five-year-old, and so therefore they're very black and white, and that five-year-old doesn't really see past or future. So as you have events that might have been very traumatic in your past, such as being assaulted or something, those stay very present because his subconscious doesn't see time. And so, for example, the way that the system views the subconscious is, say I have a client who approaches me and says, well, I have a BA in business or bachelor's in business. I have a master's in business, MBA. I specialize in marketing. I go out there. I do great in marketing until it comes time to sign on a dotted line, and then the buyer suddenly backs away. What the heck is going on? And what I may find is, as a child, that they may have had some relatives, or you know, one in particular that they knew or trusted as a 4 or 5 year old, where the relative says, look, trust me, kid, you don't want to be rich. Rich people are unhappy. Rich people have friends who take advantage of them. Rich people are chased by lawyers and the IRS, and bad things happen to rich people. Their kids get kidnapped for ransom. Trust me, you don't want to be rich. And the little kid, being an open sponge, absorbs that. And so what happens when they're trying to make a sale? Everything about their words and their approach and everything is just fine. They've been tuned up. But then there's something about their aura or their energy field, or even slipping into subconsciously their body language or their facial tics or features, that tells the client, don't buy this. Well, why would that protect the person? Well, it keeps them from making money and becoming rich, which is what the subconscious believes is a protective thing for this person, because they picked up these rules as a child, that kid, you don't want to be rich. So that's a very simple way of explaining it. But in the Psy-K standard manual, there are 7 areas of belief statements that are canned, and there's 25 statements in each one of those. And so you go through some warm-up statements to find out if there's a life lesson in a particular area, whether it's an illness or a behavioral thing or whatever. Why do I keep getting in car wrecks? And then you go through a number of those belief statements, and the way I originally learned it is the proper way from their point of view. They're rather dogmatic about it, that the person would probably be on a like a treatment table, and they'd have their arm up in the air so you could sit there and test them for an hour and they wouldn't fatigue. And so you'd muscle test that person. For about 8 years now, I've been strictly muscle testing on behalf of the client. They're much more comfortable with it. They aren't on their back, and we can do it on the phone. But we go through, and I drill down to find the most important belief statement, then I have them repeat it. And as soon as they repeat it, I muscle test it, and my clarity in doing the muscle test seems to make that belief statement manifest in their core beliefs. And we do that until I get a hit that there are no more statements out of the standard statements. And then I go, I start intuiting statements. But I'm very multimodality, and sometimes right in the middle of it, I get a big hit on a past life, and I'll jump out of that.
Yeah.
Go to the past life, have them do some belief statements about the past life to disconnect it, and then resume where we were and,
right.
and keep going.
And it's great to have those. It's great to have those abilities where you can. Well, when you have so many, so intensive background and so many modalities that you can sort of flip back and forth, because at the end of the day, it's all energy.
Yeah.
And you know, I just wanted to make a comment, and I know when you were talking to Angela there, I know that back when I took Ewan many years ago, that the thought that I could possibly hurt someone really bothered me. And I think it is very true that we all have done things to other people, and it's just not that we have become, you know, we're the ones that have been hurt. We have also been in positions of where we have affected other people. And it took me a while to get my head wrapped around that, but I think once that we do, then it makes it easier. So at some point in time that we did hurt that person, and then, you know, later on, you know, down throughout time or space, then, you know, they perhaps have hurt us, and that can happen.
Yeah.
Because it's frightening to think that you could actually do that to another person, but, you know, we're all just human beings.
Well, one of the things I tell people is a long time ago, I gave up any idea of judgment. I believe that, you know, any part of consciousness has a spark of the Creator, a spark of the divine in it, and the Creator would never condemn that spark because that would be condemning itself. So we're here to learn. So if I look out the window and I see two guys, Bob and Joe, and I see Bob shoot Joe, our traditional mm-hmm. society would say that Bob's a bad guy, Joe's the innocent victim, and Bob ought to be punished. And sure enough, from some people's point of view, he ought to be condemned to hell. Unless I drill down into it, I may find, if I start looking at it, that Joe killed Bob by shooting him in another lifetime, and mm-hmm. they both decided to come back and give it another try. Or another mm-hmm. possibility is that in a previous lifetime, Bob shot Joe, and they both decided to come back to give Bob another chance to see if Bob had learned and could walk away
right.
from the situation without pulling the trigger. So I don't know, and even when I do know, I'm not going to be judgmental. One of the things that in my bio is retrieving souls from hell. Back about 2006 in a meditation, I was shown into the lower worlds and sort of like a dungeon, and found people who they showed me that were being tortured. And I said, "What is this?" And they said, "Well, sir, hell." I said, "Well, what am I supposed to do about this?" And they said, "The only reason they're here is because when they died, they thought they should go to hell. They thought that there was a hell, and they had an image of what hell looked like. And so basically the Creator says yes and lets them manifest their reality as that hell. And angels hang around, and after 200 or 300 or 400 years of that, going day in and day out of torture, they finally just say, "Is this it? You know, is there anything else?" And an angel steps in and says, "Well, what else would you like there to be?" Well, I was shown that I could stand these people up, clean them off, put them in fresh clothes, take them into a side room with a number of spiritual beings, and help them understand that that hell was their illusion, and they were free to release it, and we could take them back to a spiritual plane where they could reconcile with everybody that they had to deal with. And so I started doing that. So when you start seeing life like that, it changes a whole lot of viewpoints. Yeah, there's a lot of people who do negative things, and to the extent possible, I will intervene as I can. But I'm not going to look at an event and look at a person in there and say, oh, they should be damned to hell, and you know,
right.
they're horrible people, and they should burn forever. No, that's not in my conceptual framework of how the spiritual plane works.
Can I ask you, Dave, and there's a number of us practitioners who've been experiencing something recently, and
sure.
we believe we've had received psychic attacks.
Yes.
And I had an experience not that long ago with a client, and it was just nasty, scathing letter I received, and that day I felt really, really ill. And because of my previous experience of having a cardiac arrest, having my own near-death experience and coming back, my husband looks at me, my face is white, and he's worried, and I'm just feeling intuitively, this isn't right. I just felt, no, I'm not having a cardiac arrest, but boy, something sure is happening here. And so I put it out into my practitioner world, and it's wonderful because there's, you know, we keep in touch with one another, help each other in crisis.
Uh-huh.
It's a wonderful, wonderful group. And people are testing, and I was having a lot of clearings done. And it's really unsettling. And then I'm hearing stories of some other people, other practitioners that are also getting these psychic attacks. And it's to the point now, you don't know what to do. You know, and what are your thoughts on this? Because nobody wants to stop with the work that we love to do, the healing work, how we love to help people. But at some point in time, it could be like previous times where you just get shut down. Maybe your head's not chopped off or burned at the stake. But when you receive these attacks, it's not a pleasant thing.
Yeah. I could talk for hours on this. Let me give you the short answer, and then let me suggest that I'd be happy to come on your show again in the near future and walk people through what this dark stuff looks like and what you can do for psychic self-defense.
Okay.
But, yes, there are a lot of people out there who, from my point of view, they've made a deal with the devil. I mean, even teenage girls who think they're going to do simple little love potions or love spells, they're already starting to make a contract with the dark side, and someday that check is going to get cashed. And it's not a healthy thing. And I've done some, in my energy and energy clearing work, I've done some work with parents who have kids who essentially have possessions from messing around with this stuff. But there are a lot of adults. The light workers are always in evidence. They're upfront about being light workers. The dark workers show up and sort of maintain a yin and yang balance, and they don't announce who they are. So you don't know if that woman in the elegant business suit in the next cubicle is sweetness and light, or if she's out there sacrificing goats on the full moon.
You don't
know when they do this kind of stuff. And the number of clearings that I do, I've been clearing, you know, places for about 12 years. The number of places that have evidence that they're, at some time in the past, there's been satanic rituals on them, and I clear those as part of the clearing process.
Okay.
It's extensive. And I'm disappointed in these paranormal shows. I tell people not to watch them. I've had to clear some houses where the houses have been infected by stuff coming through the TV screen from the energy of these shows. So there are people out there doing curses, and in some cases I've had clients where there have been blood sacrifice animals curses against them, and having to clear that off. My strengths have gotten to the point that frequently I will sort of go out and neutralize this other person's perversion of their gifts. with the spiritual plane. And so I do that when these people are identified, because it's, to me, it's just it's so inappropriate. The I'll just call it the evil factor of the world is way, way up where it should have been, past where it should have been. We need some so that people have a choice. They can exercise free will. They can make moral choices. But the level we have on the planet right now is excessive, and it goes beyond whatever the plan was supposed to be. So there's a lot of it out there.
That's what I'm feeling, Dave, and I don't know if you followed the thought process of the veils or the thinning of the veils, but I'm just sensing that we are, you know, anybody who does light work or healing work or whatever, you know, you want to call it, but they're really putting themselves out there. It's almost like we're really visible now, and where you just want to hibernate. And I know I do a lot of hibernation, and I know that I have to stop that because it's, you know, I need to get out in the real world with people.
one of the things that I've had a lot of discussions with are the people who do teaching for, like, the Healing Touch program for that type of energy work and others in other areas. And I believe that they ought to have a lot more in the lower levels talking about how to put up boundaries around you. So, you know, you get somebody who shows up and they're a nice young person and they're in their 20s and they take this energy healing class and they can't wait to go out and start trying it on clients. And from my point of view, because of their empathy with the client and their lack of protection in being around the client, they have what I call STDs or spiritually transmitted diseases. Where in their office or wherever they practice, things jump on, things jump off, things hook on. And so there are some of my clients who I routinely do clearing around them, whether it's massage or acupuncture, you know, every 2 or 3 months to clean their area, because frequently they're near other people's offices doing the same thing, and you have a lot of clients coming in, and these entities and energies around them are jumping on, jumping off, and I don't see any protection. It's like, you know, really, if you know what a glove box looks like from a laboratory where you're working on something behind the glass and you use these, you know, forearm length rubber gloves to deal with it so nothing can get on you, that's sort of what your intention should be when you're doing this energy work, where you're free to sense stuff, but there's still a boundary there that energies can't come off of the client and try to attach to you.
Dave, we were definitely going to have to do another show on this. It's a fascinating topic. It's affecting many people that I personally know, and I would love to have you come back on, but we're going to have to close up the show. And just give people very quickly your contact information, how they can get in. Yes, okay, go ahead.
Easiest way to find me is through my website, www.davethemystic, that's all one word, .com. You can also call me on my cell. I'm open to phone calls to talk about what I do if I have to help you get familiarized. And that's 303-902-5323. And also, there's a reference on my website to my web radio show that I do on Monday nights. And I've been doing that since about 2010 and have over 300 shows saved up on a variety of topics, including clearing and spiritual protection. So feel free to peruse the past shows.
Thank you so much, Dave. I know we could just be talking for hours here.
Absolutely.
It's just so fascinating. I love it. So, well, we'll get together here again and arrange something. So thanks, everybody, for coming on. I will have a recording on my website, which is whisperingenergetic.ca. That's whisperingenergetic.ca. And you can listen to the replay. So once again, thank you for coming on. Thank you, Dave. It's fascinating topics. And we will be approaching these topics again here, hopefully sooner than later. So bye, everybody. Thank you, Dave.
You're
great.
Welcome. Good night.
Okay. Bye-bye.